Some of us are looking for validation in all the wrong places. Most of that is an inside job. And when I finally got clear that most all of that is an inside job, it was a game changer.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Us podcast. Wherever you are in your personal or professional journey, this podcast is a means to inspire you and give you some insights on what it can mean to achieve personal success. Follow us on Instagram. Just look us up at chroniclesofus.with.nags. You'll find there behind-the-scenes content, teasers, and more information on our upcoming guests. Hi, everyone. Today, I actually wanted to talk to you about how we feel and see ourselves. I often read or see the sentence, happiness comes from within. Sounds great, right? But somehow we end up letting other people influence how we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves. I find that very difficult. And how we value ourselves sometimes, but also the life we live and the things we have, or even the dreams or the things we aspire to have. And in my mind, that behavior is really, it has its roots somewhere in your childhood. So I'm never really sure where. It could be your parents, could be brothers, sisters, extended family, or teachers. It can be a lot of people, moments in our lives, but we tend to carry this into our adulthood. And even though at the beginning it's kind of helpful in, you know, getting a sense of where you should go, what you should do, you know, as you grow up, I realized recently that a lot of these things I was carrying, for example, actually really became detrimental to me as an adult. And so, yeah, I'm actually especially happy to talk about this with a fellow podcaster of mine that I invited today to join me, Coach Maddox. Hi, thank you so much for joining, and I'm really excited you're here with me today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very excited to be here today.
So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and, you know, how you would describe yourself before we get into the discussion of today?
I would describe myself as an ambivert. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I'm not fully extroverted, but I'm not fully introverted. I do recharge my battery by being still and quiet and alone, but there are times when I do get energy from being around people, and I'm very social, in other words. I am a very sensitive person, so I'm an empath, so I feel the feelings of people around me. Very sensitive. I'm actually a highly sensitive person, if you're familiar with that term. About 10% of the world's population are highly sensitive people.
Yeah.
And so that was always challenging until I really understood it. And I only came to understand it maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It really connected the dots and helped me understand myself in a way that I had never understood myself. And that was a beautiful thing. And I see it as a positive thing. I don't know that I always saw it as a positive thing, but I do see being a highly sensitive person now as a very positive thing. I can be a little high strung at times. I am a recovering perfectionist. I'm also a recovering control freak.
I love that. I'm going to steal that from you.
Yeah. I guess that's what comes to mind at the moment.
Yeah. So thank you for that. How did you get into coaching? Let's start there. I'm very curious about, as a highly sensitive person, it feels to me like coaching people if you're highly sensitive, can be kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time, because how do you not carry things with you as well when you are able to connect and feel what the other person's feeling? So what brought you to coaching?
You know, that is really a challenge, that when you can feel so much that you can take it on for yourself if you're not careful. And we'll come back to that maybe perhaps in a minute. But, you know, it was very accidental in the way that I landed on coaching. I was a 40-year career hairdresser. I owned my own salon, and the vast majority of my clients were women, especially in the last many, many years, probably 85 or 90% of my clients were women. And being that highly sensitive person, women would come in and sit down in my chair, and while I was doing their hair, they would tell me about their life, tell me what their challenges were. And I found myself, well, we call it in the industry, an armchair psychologist. And it came very, very naturally to me. They would come in and share their issues, and I would make suggestions or ask them questions to kind of get clear and help them get clear. And then at one point, I don't know, maybe somewhere in the early 2000s, when we started to see articles and things about this new blossoming profession called coaching, I read an article and I was like, well, heck, I've been doing that for ages. I mean, what it described was exactly what I was doing with my clients. And so I became very, very intrigued, you know, knowing that someday I would want to retire from the hairdressing industry, because I stood on my feet for over 40 years, day yeah. after day after day. And there's a point when your body just says no more. And so I began to explore, read about coaching. And then the next step was I signed up for, you know, a course and got certified, I guess, maybe in 2008, perhaps. And then began to kind of coach on the side, still doing hair at the salon, but working on the side with coaching clients. And I did the two together for a period of years. And at the end of 2019, I retired from the beauty industry. It was exactly 40 years.
Wow. It's almost you had your training before you had the degree, because you were doing it already.
I was doing it already. Now, the training certainly gave me some skills. And, it really helped me approach it more intentionally. I had been doing it all empathically and intuitively, which was really, really great. But then I had some tools and some skills to add to the mix, which made it more intentional.
Yeah.
And so I had all this history with women, so it was just the natural thing to start to coach women. And to date, the majority of my clients have been female. I have worked with only a tiny small handful of men. I am now working kind of in that direction, hence the podcast, the Authentic Gay Man podcast. I am now leaning in and beginning to have conversations and perhaps work with gay men.
And I wonder what is it? Have you noticed anything specific about coaching women? Any angles that you think that you see more often in women and that you're able to help with during your coaching? Some trends, I guess, or things that really speak to you that makes you connect so well?
I think that in all of those years of listening to women talk about their lives, the thing that the pattern that became very prominent and very consistent was, and not all, but there is an incredibly high percentage of women who give away their power.
What do you mean with that?
rather than standing up and being able to, you know, stand in their own, to speak up for themselves, to have a voice, to speak their truth, oftentimes they acquiesce to the men around them, to people in places of authority. Somebody can say something unkind and they just take it. They don't say anything. So many of women I find are people pleasers, and they have been, well, in our society and in many societies, we raise women to serve. We raise women to put everybody before themselves, to put their spouse before them, to put their children before them. And I watched over and over again how women didn't do anything for themselves. They put others in their life, their husband, their children, their family, sometimes their parents before themselves. And then at some point when their children left the nest, they looked up one day and they looked at their husband and they didn't really know who he was anymore because they had put so much of their energy into their children. They looked in the mirror and they didn't know who they were anymore. If they weren't going to wear this cap that said mother on it, they didn't. Once that role ended, they were lost. I've watched so many women have a complete identity crisis when the last child left the nest. And it's because they've given it all away.
I think somewhere it's also something that we inherit. I don't know how much you believe in the things that we inherit from the previous generations that we kind of carry, whether we know, whether it's conscious or unconscious, or it just seems like it's such a long history of, as you said, men having the authority and women being told to just listen or go along or stay on the sidelines. That it's, even if you're in an environment where you've been recently, for example, you've been raised, you're still young and you're raised to go after your dreams and things like this, somewhere it still feels like it's tough work to do. There's always a moment where you let that authority or others' influence get in and impact you.
Absolutely. I think it's very familial. It's passed down from generation to generation. Your mother passed it down to you, her mother passed it down to her, and it just goes on and on. When you read the data and the statistics, we find that abuse is passed down from generation to generation. And it's a very hard cycle to break. I heard a really wonderful story one time that said, that was this story about this woman who was making a ham for dinner for her family. Mm-hmm. And her husband noticed that he'd seen this before. Every time she made a ham, she cut the end of the ham off and threw it away. And like one day he asked her, excuse me?
Like a deja vu kind of thing. Like you've seen it before, but you're not sure where.
Every time she cooked a ham, she would cut the end off and throw it away. And one day he said, well, why do you do that? That's perfectly good meat. Why do you cut that off and throw it away? And she said, well, that's the way my mother did it. And so she reached out and said to her mom, why did you always cut the end of the ham off and throw it away? She said, because that was the way my mother did it. Grandma was still alive, so they reached out to Grandma and said, Grandma, why did you always cut the end of the ham off and throw it away? She said, because I had a short loaf pan and the ham wouldn't fit in the pan, so I cut the part off that wouldn't fit in the pan. So three generations had wasted ham because they didn't understand why she initially started cutting the end of the ham off was to get it in a pan that was too small. But that certainly tells the story of how we pass anything down. Yeah. whether it's abuse or neglect, or whether it's, you know, ways that we are subservient to our spouse. It's passed down. It's environmental, largely. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot to break that cycle.
Yeah. How have you been surrounded by women as you grew up, and have you noticed yourself that in your own life as well? I wonder.
I have, yes, been surrounded by women all of my life. Women have always just gravitated toward me. When I was a teenager, maybe about 13, my family had a family business. And my dad felt like I had finally gotten old enough that maybe I could help out a little bit and participate around the business. And so I started helping with customers. And I noticed right away that the women customers, the female customers, just were drawn to me, and particularly the older ones. We had, there was an apartment complex across the street from our business that was predominantly senior citizen women, many of them widowed, and they were our customers. And they would come in and they always wanted to see me. And they would just open up and talk to me, just like throughout my life. The number one thing that has been said to me is, I just feel so safe when I'm in your presence. I know I can trust you. I get that all the time. All the time. And they would. They would come in. They were widowed, so they were lonely. They didn't have their husband any longer. And they would talk to me, and I would listen. And my dad would say, son, you can't spend that much time with every customer.
It's bad for business.
I would say, but daddy, they need me. I can't not spend that time with them. And he didn't get it. He didn't understand. But my ability to do that paid off throughout my life. You know, in everything I've done since then, it paid off. Yes, it slowed things down in that business, because that was a business where, you know, it was kind of like running the register at the grocery store. You needed to check their groceries and get them to the next person. But it worked. I made it work somehow. But I would take time to listen to them. And because I look back now, I wouldn't have had the language for this then. But I look back now and realize that they just needed to be seen and heard, which is a basic human need. We all, whether we can language that or not, we have an innate need to be seen and heard. And so I do that. I did that at my salon. I do that in my coaching, and I do that in my podcast. I bring on guests and I create this space where they can share their story, speak their truth, and be seen and heard.
Can I extend that question to you? Have you felt seen and heard in your life?
There has been a big portion of my life where I did not feel seen and heard. Now, that's not my current situation. In my current situation, most of the time I feel seen and heard. You know, I can look back and see all of the crazy shenanigans that I did trying to get that need to be seen and heard met. And what I was doing, and it's only been recently that I realized this, what I was doing was I was doing things to get attention. Mm-hmm. I would dance on the tables. I would tell jokes at parties. I would wear outrageous outfits or jewelry or hairstyles. And it's just been recently that I've realized that one is getting attention and the other is actually being seen and heard. And there is no amount of attention that can satiate that need to be seen and heard. They are two different things.
And we often confuse them, right? It's like you're trying to draw attention, but it's not at all giving you what you're actually hoping it will.
It is a bottomless pit. It's damaging, and it's a bottomless pit. You can't go on, well, I'll use Instagram as an example. You just scroll through the feed and there's just all these people that are doing all kinds of crazy things just to get attention. All the TikTok dancing and all the things just to get attention. And what they're clearly trying to do is meet that need to be seen and heard. And it isn't happening. So they just ramp the attention getting up, thinking, if I get enough, and it's you just can't get there. You can't get there. It's not truly being seen and heard. We know when we're truly seen and heard because we really feel it deep in our core. And it has somewhat of a lasting feeling, whereas the attention getting, it's like, I liken it to a July 4th sparkler.
Mm.
It's fun while it's sparkling, but it burns out in just a moment. And when it's done, it's done. There's no lasting gratification from it.
What made you realize when you were wearing these hats and you were trying to, you know, get attention, what made you realize this wasn't giving you what you were searching for? Was there a moment or an event where you went like it clicked for you and you realized, this is not it. Like, I'm not happy.
I don't think I had that moment that way. I think that it actually came to me when I was watching all of this activity on social media. I was kind of mesmerized by the length that people would go to. And it was this aha moment going, oh, they're trying to be seen and heard, but they're getting attention instead. And it was just this light bulb moment when I, in that moment, could realize all of my own history of doing all the crazy things to get attention, thinking that it would make me feel seen and heard. Once again, at that time, I didn't have the language for it at all.
Yeah.
But when I was able to see the distinction between getting attention and being seen and heard, now I don't need to do any of that crazy stuff to get attention anymore.
I wonder sometimes if those who try the hardest to get attention are the ones who actually are the most desperate or in need of real love or something else. Like, there's, you know, sometimes you see people really active on social media and they're doing so well and they're on there all the time and they're like, it gets crazier and more frequent and everything. I sometimes, when I watch this, because it came to a moment where I had the same realization you're talking about. And then I was like, how are they really? Like, I almost got worried for them and I don't know them. But one of the examples that come to mind is if you look at the celebrities, the heartache that is often behind all those smiles and things and PR moments. And Robin Williams, who you would never imagine, for example, had a depression, was suffering from depression when you saw him on the screen. It's just, I get really worried about these people, and I worry about my own children in the future, who social media is kind of the baseline of what they consider a means to get attention or to feel loved or seen and heard. And I really worry about that.
Well, I think at the end of the day, whether it's attention getting or being seen and heard, what's underneath that we're actually seeking is validation.
Yeah, that is so true.
And we all have a need for validation. But the tricky part is, once again, when we're being validated by others, it's like that July 4th sparkler. It's a flash in the pan, and then we need it. It's just like a little quick hit of some
adrenaline.
Dopamine or oxytocin, yeah, or some, you know, it makes us feel good for a brief moment, and then we need another hit of that drug. And that's because external validation can never, ever, once again, satiate a need. The only way we ever truly feel validated is when it's come from within, when we've learned how to validate ourselves. You know, when you have learned how to validate yourself, you don't need the validation of others. When the validation of others comes, it feels nice and you can appreciate it and you can enjoy it, but you don't need it. When we can't validate ourselves is where the desperation comes from. So it's now we're doing anything we got to do. We want those likes, you know. We'll do anything to get those likes on our social media because that validates us, but only for that brief moment. And it's a bottomless pit. It's a hole that can never be filled.
How do you get to that point where the validation is just, between brackets, a compliment, and you don't really need it to feel good about yourself? Is that coaching? Is that therapy? Is that, you know, is there an action? And I imagine we all, are there people even that do not grow up needing that validation, or is that inherent to the human nature that every single person will look for it?
I think there are some people that don't really need much validation. Now, why that is maybe a mystery. Perhaps at an early age, they learned how to validate themselves. In my experience, and there's so many ways to skin a cat, you know, there's no one blanket answer here. Yeah. You ask coaching, therapy, it's D, all of the above. It's the varying different personal development books that you can read. There's we have more at our fingertips now with the internet than we've ever had. We have crazy resources, you know, for someone to not participate in personal growth. There was a time where personal growth was expensive, you know?
Yeah.
But we have so much that's available to us free now. There's no excuse not to be on a path of growth. When I think back about that journey from needing validation from others to learning how to validate myself, that journey came with raising my awareness until I understood that the external validation was never going to be enough. It was through the varying different things that I did, whether it was therapy, coaching, I've done it all of the expensive seminars and the workshops and the books. I have been on a personal growth path consciously for 37 years. And I can tell you exactly where I was and what I was doing when it started. And it changed my life, changed the trajectory of my life forever. And in the most positive ways, I would never go back. I would never, never, never go back. But for me, it was making a simple choice. Once I had the awareness and the understanding, it came down to a simple choice of, oh, I see, I need to validate me, because that's the only way it's ever going to totally, like, satiate that need. If I'm ever going to feel satisfied, it has to come from me. When it comes from, and this is true for so many things. You know, I look back on many, many years where I sought safety all out here. I was looking for this safe people, safe places, mm-hmm. and no matter where I looked, I couldn't find it. It's kind of like the song, looking for love in all the wrong places. I was looking for safety in all the wrong places. Some of us are looking for validation in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
Most of that is an inside job. And when I finally got clear that most all of that is an inside job, it was a game changer. There's a lot of power in knowing that you have the power to do it all, that you don't have to get it from anybody else. There's tremendous power in that. And there's tremendous liberation in that.
It is so true. It's really fascinating, because I think we can talk about this for hours, but I see it even in myself, and I see it in my kids when I'm raising them. And I try to be a better parent, obviously, as you know, as I have all this knowledge available to me. And sometimes it's too much and I don't know what to make sense of anymore, what to focus on. So there's also a, you know, the other side of the medal, or where you just don't know anymore and there's so much information coming at you that you just get paralyzed a little bit. But
that's
I noticed
correct.
In my
yeah, I agree it's, completely. We've got so much that it's almost too much sometimes, too many choices.
And then what I've also learned is then just try something, by the way, and then just if it doesn't work, just try something else. It's like trial and error almost, because, you know, it's just so hard. But I noticed recently, and I was having a conversation today actually with a colleague about that and my work. It's when you get and I don't know if that's as a woman, but it feels like, again, back to what we said about being a woman and having been raised mostly to serve others, is that even in a professional setting, I consistently question my abilities. And never mind how many times people, you know, have told me, oh, you're doing a great job, this was awesome, you're a leader, you're this, that, etc. It just doesn't seem to be enough. And it just, when you said it earlier, it just kind of landed. And then I'm constantly seeking that validation, every single person I meet, to the point where I'm thinking like, I must sound really like a very insecure person to others, always kind of second guessing myself. How have you been able to help women that you have coached or friends or others or even yourself in shifting that perspective to be able to achieve and let go of? It's like a weight that is weighing you down in your life almost. You can't move forward unless you release that weight. But the releasing part is just so hard.
It is. And it's what you're describing is very draining.
Yeah.
When we're continually second guessing ourselves, we're doubting ourselves. And you know, that's part of social conditioning in many of our cultures. Certainly in our culture here in the United States, it's we literally socialize women to be the way they are. And that's all been part of the patriarchy. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy things in place to keep women in second place, to have men be superior. I am an older white male. I am that older white privileged male that we talk about. And I'm very aware that it is the patriarchy that has very firmly put that in place. And it's not healthy for us as men any more than it is for you as women, but for very different reasons. And that's a whole different topic in of itself. And I'm not sure I'm really qualified to speak of that, but I am aware of it. And that's why I'm such an advocate of women, because I've seen the complete oppression. I mean, even in some of my clients as a hairdresser, I saw how they were oppressed by their spouses. And I speak out against that. I mean, one of the main things that I teach women how to do is to set boundaries. You know, the metaphor that I use is, so you've been taught all of your life to put everybody before you. But let's stop and look at this for a minute. When you're on a plane and you're getting ready to take off, the flight attendant comes out and she goes through all the safety protocols, or he goes through, they male, female, they go through the safety protocols. And one of the things they say is, if there should be a change in cabin pressure, an oxygen mask will drop from the panel above your head. Be sure to put your mask on first before you help those around you. This is a metaphor for life.
Honestly, I would never. If my child or anybody else is around me, I'll probably be like, and I'm curious to know if you think more women would do that. I would literally take care of the others before myself.
It's counterintuitive. It is, well, it's what the way you've been conditioned.
Yeah.
It is counterintuitive, because you know that as soon as you get the oxygen on you, then you can help 20 people. But if you don't get the oxygen on you, you may not be able to help one.
20. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is such a metaphor for life. I have women who they're completely drained of energy because they have given it all away. And it's crazy how, as they start to put themselves first, which is hard at first because it's so counter to what you've been trying to do, start to put themselves first and start to fill their tank first, you know, to operate mm-hmm. instead of operating from an empty tank where you're having to reach for reserves, to operate from a full tank.
That brings me to guilt. So I completely understand what you're saying. The seconds, the few moments, and the second I kind of go, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that, right? The immediate follow-up is a sense of guilt. And they're interconnected, right? We also inherit guilt. This part of the whole we're raised to be to serve others and to take care of others first. But guilt is such a, it's like the punisher kind of thing. It's really coming the moment you got the courage to look after yourself, to put your own mask first. You've got guilt and many levels of it that come running at you and just like it's knocking you off your feet.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd be willing to bet that you have been taught that putting yourself first is selfish.
Yes, first thought, absolutely.
Yes, it's a tough equation. You know, one of the things that I find is I literally have to re-educate my clients. Because when we give it all away, it's just a matter of time before we're not a happy camper any longer. When we're drained all the time, because we put everybody else before us, there's a point where we just don't really have the energy to perform. We're not as good a spouse. We're not as good a mother. We're not as good a worker at work because we're drained. Now everyone and everything is suffering. Whereas when you turn the tables, you put you first, you put your oxygen mask on first. You're always rested and recharged and rejuvenated. You have so much to give everybody around you. You have more to give to your job, more to give to your husband, more to give to your children. Mm. But it has to be because you filled your cup first. And it's a game changer. I teach a process which I have entitled, We Train People How to Treat Us. I wish I had a better name for it. And I've thought and thought and thought. I can't come up with a better name for it. But I have a coaching client that I'm currently working with, and she really resonated with that. She'd heard me speak about it, and she reached out to me and said, I want to know more about this. I want to work with you. And so we started working, and this client is truly a rock star. She has gotten in the trenches. She's decided to do the heavy lifting. She knew she wanted her life to change. It wasn't working the way it was, and she's willing to do whatever it took. She is 50 years old. She's been married for 10 years. She's got a 6-year-old son and a mother who is very needy. And they were all draining her. All three of them were draining her. She was energyless most of the time, not morbidly unhappy, but a little bit down, kind of like a little depressed and drained. And yeah. Now, if she were to speak to you right now, she would say she whipped everybody in her life into shape. The husband, the 6-year-old, and the mother. As she began to understand this whole concept of we train people how to treat us, she put that into play in a big way. And now she's in charge. You know, they're all coming to her and looking to her to guide them on how to treat her the best they can treat her. I mean, after a lifetime of mom being needy, mom's no longer needy. Mom's completely backed off.
That's fantastic.
But, you know, You asked a question earlier. What is the motivation to make these changes? That's where we got derailed. You asked that question and we kind of went off on a little bit of sidestep. And that question was an excellent question. What is the motivator? And my answer would be, in my experience, my personal experience in my own life, what motivated me and what I have observed that appeared to motivate many of the people that I've worked with, both as a hairdresser and a coach, is pain. Pain is one of the largest motivators there are. Studies show that pain is a much bigger motivator than pleasure, that we will do a lot to avoid pain.
And usually we start working on that too late. I spoke to a few guests, and burnout, for example, is one of the key motivators that kind of are a moment in their lives where they shifted, either physical pain or emotional, psychological burnout. It was the moment, you know, same question I asked you. Was there a moment where you kind of realized, when it hit you, where you made a change? And it's usually indeed pain.
You know, for many, many years, I've said, I don't even know where I got this, but when we are tired and sick of being sick and tired, we change. Yes. And not until then.
So how do we change that? How do we make sure that that doesn't happen at 40 or 50 like your client, or that it happens earlier, that realization? So we don't, is it even possible to wait until we don't have pain to make sure we go after what we want and we live the life we lead, we want?
Well, I think what comes to my mind, and this is a tricky part, because as we talked about earlier in this conversation, this generational thing that's been passed down through each generation, that pattern is very hard to break. But somewhere along the way, we've got to address this with little girls. And there's things that you got to address with little boys too, but that's not what we're focused on right here. You wanted to talk about, you know, and yeah, many of the people that come on your podcast are women. We've got to change it before it gets entrenched. In other words, what age are your children?
Well, I have a 10, a 6, and a 4, and the girl is the 4-year-old.
So now's the time with her.
Yeah.
And it can't be that you just tell her to put herself first so she can take better care of other people, because children never follow what we tell them to do. Yeah. They follow what we model to them.
Yeah, I can repeat myself 1,000 times. It's not going to get in anyway.
So. It's what we model. So yeah, if you want to break the cycle in your family, the number one way to do that is to, while she's still only 4 years old,
first and visibly,
model to her, start to show her how to take care of herself. Because when we truly take care of ourselves is when we have the most power to take care of those around us. We can do so much more for everybody around us when we've taken care of us first. They don't understand it first. You know, when we start to make that shift, they don't understand. They feel like something's being taken away from them. But as soon as you get to the point where you are recharged and refreshed and you've got that full tank, then you begin to show up in all of their lives in a much more powerful way. Then they get it. But it's a tricky hurdle to get through. And it requires some boldness. It requires some boundary setting and some speaking of your truth. And it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight.
If you don't do it for yourself, do it for your children or do it for the next generation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like the dad who grew up being abused by his father, and now he's a father. He's at choice. He can either do the same thing to his child that was done to him, or he can break the cycle. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's easy. It is not easy.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe and recommend our podcast to your friends. You can also leave a review or a rating. We'll appreciate that. Do you have a great story to share that can help others in their own journey? Then get in touch via Instagram or by visiting our chroniclesofus.org website and email us. Thanks again, stay curious, and until next time.